City Sport Pods.
I remember walking off after that saying, we can definitely go and beat him now.
We didn't really like each other, but we really respected each other.
Five of us and four of them got suspended.
Welcome back to the Premier League Storybook with me, Jake Humphrey. It's time for Chapter 8, The Invincibles. We heard a few chapters back how Arsene Wenger came in and revolutionised Arsenal's mentality and practices on and off the pitch and took them to the top of English football in a tussle with Manchester United. And while the double in 1998 and a fantastic title win in 2002 lives long in the memory in the red half of North London, the 2003-04 season will always be placed above all others. The Invincibles are the first name on the table when it comes to discussing great sides from Premier League history. They were a perfect balance of grit and skill, fantastic to watch while taking no prisoners. Try as they might, the other fantastic sides down the years can't match their incredible record. A zero in the loss column. We'll hear from Gunner star Ray Parlour on that incredible season and how Wenger created the perfect blend to leave the rest of the division in their wake. First though, last week we heard Paul Scholes on Manchester United's treble win in 99. The two clubs spent the following few years in one of the most intense rivalries the game has ever seen, and understanding that dynamic is crucial to the Invincibles' backstory.
People talk about City and Liverpool now, two great football teams, but I don't think them teams had the character of players that were in and around that 4 or 5 year period. I think we both respected each other, don't get me wrong. We knew Arsenal were a good team. We knew they could do everything. They could win games by being aggressive, being tough, getting stuck into people. Or they could win games by playing brilliant football with the brilliant players they had. And you know, we felt pretty much the same in that way as well. So that you know, they took us all the way. Now they had fighters, we had fighters, they had brilliant footballers, we had brilliant footballers. So it was always going to be difficult challenging them and for them challenging us, and you know, we tried to do that the best we can.
Rio Ferdinand joined Scholes and Man United in 2002 after the Gunners' second Premier League win and was a crucial protagonist in the ongoing rivalry.
Looking back, it's a moment and history in the Premier League. Do you know what I mean? When anyone talks about history and big moments in the Premier League, that's one episode that is definitely in that conversation. And being in there and in the middle of that with a team, seeing it all happen and unfold, it was a great rivalry. Because it was a pure rivalry. It wasn't based on fans' hatred. It was actually a footballing rivalry where we didn't really like each other, but we really respected each other. And we knew how good they were. They knew how good we were. But that respect was at the real core of it all. And we always knew that it was going to be a fight. No matter how classy both teams were and could be, we knew at first it was going to have to be a fight. Who's going to win the physical duels, individual battles as a team before anything? And they're the things that you love. They're the things that you, when you play football, the satisfaction you get from games like that and what it means in terms of a title race as well.
The two players, however, are in no doubt about the quality of their arch enemy in that 2004 season.
We had to get on with what we were doing. What other teams are doing isn't really any of our business. But like I said, we knew they were a good team. We knew they were a special team. You talk about the back four, the back five with the goalkeeper, Vieira, Pires, Thierry Henry. We knew they were a very good team. It was some achievement because you know I don't think we ever thought we could possibly do it. It was never something at the start of a season, right, we're going to go and try and win every game. Not get beat in every game. So look, we gave them great credit for doing it. It's a brilliant achievement. But it was all about winning the league. We didn't care if we didn't lose a game all season. As long as we had most points at the end of the year, the end of the season, it didn't really matter. But you know, you've got to give great credit to Arsenal for that team.
They were a great team. Some great players. Thierry Henry being the figurehead. But you look at the likes of Robert Pires, who was one of the most underrated players. Unreal player. Ashley Cole, that whole left side was phenomenal, but Vieira, man, he was like the driving force, ridiculous player. They were a great solid team all round. You could win games in many different ways.
Jens Lehmann, a new signing from Borussia Dortmund, was a mainstay in the Invincibles team between the posts and was shocked at his first taste of United and Arsenal sparring in a ferocious goalless draw just a few weeks into the season.
I realised that English football was very special. First of all, the atmosphere was fantastic. I think 70,000 people there at Old Trafford. And the game was probably was the first really, really intense game, Man United. And the biggest you can get. So they had a couple of chances, and I think we had a couple of chances. And it was very rough in the boxes because as a German goalkeeper, I was always used to being protected a little bit more by the referees. So there was a different approach, and I realized it even later when at the penalty and the things which happened around the penalty, a lot of players were pushing and even punching each other and insulting, and nothing happened. And I called home after that game and said, oh, it's great here in England, because everybody can push people around and can misbehave on the pitch and nothing happens. Just to learn that 4 days later, I think five of us and four of them got suspended in the aftermath of that game.
Lehmann had come in to replace an Arsenal legend and didn't disappoint.
David was an English legend, and obviously I didn't intend even to put to fill in his footsteps. So the only good thing was that the fans did not change a lot from Seaman to Lehmann. I thought, okay, I'm happy to be here. I'm just trying to do my best for the club, and let's wait and see.
So what was Arsene Wenger's perfect blend that saw Arsenal have that excellent season? And what went on behind the scenes? And where does the Invincibles' legacy stand now? Ray Parlour had been a cult hero at Highbury since the early 90s, but cemented his place in Gunners folklore as a key component of the Invincibles. Let's hear what he had to say on that stunning season. Well, let's talk then about that period, because I suppose the thing we wanted to talk to you about really mainly was the change that you saw, because lots of players arrived in that sort of Wenger era, but you were a guy that had been there for a decade before this sort of big change in English football and Arsene Wenger coming in. How did you find that balance, like, between the old and the new?
Yeah, well, what it was, I mean, David Dean said, we got this new manager, obviously after Bruce Rioch, and everybody thought he was going to be a new British manager, if I'm being honest. Who's it going to be? Who's available at that time? Who's British? And then all of a sudden, Arsene Wenger turned up. And it was a massive shock, really, because I didn't know who Arsene Wenger was. I mean, David Seaman, Tony Adams, all them sort of guys. I was going to, who's Arsene Wenger? Well, we don't know either, really. But David Dean had been tracking the manager from Monaco. He met him and he saw the intelligence he had and the focus he had, but wanting to, you know, be successful. So that was the big move for me. But yeah, he was brilliant, absolutely unbelievable. No disrespect to my other managers, but he had such a focus. And the first meeting we ever had with him, you could sense what he wanted to achieve as a person himself, but also as a group of players and a team. And after that, we just went with him. And to be fair to him, he said to us, he said, well, I'm going to watch the training. I'm going to see who I like. I'm going to see who's got potential to be a player who play under me, and then I'm going to meet everybody face to face and tell them who I want to keep. And lucky enough, I was one of them, those people who I met him and said, look, I really want to, I think you've got great potential, you can improve a lot, and I want you to stay. A big help as well was he doubled everybody's money, which was a big help for everybody, because everybody went, I like this manager.
I've not heard that before, that he doubled everyone's money.
Yeah. It was more like, I think our back five, or I always call them a back six. It was a back four, but it was a back six. Dave Seaman, Steve Bould, Martin Keown, Tony Adams, Lee Dixon, Roger Winterburn. He said they're the worst paid players in Europe for what they've achieved. So obviously under the old regime, it was, you know, pay structure. And all of a sudden, everybody got a pay rise. And all of the lads go, oh, I'm having this manager. He knows exactly what he's doing. And I think everybody went with the system then. And, you know, he was magnificent. Always training field. He was on that training field every single day. And the training was never too long or never too short. He got the maximum out of everybody in a period of, say, you know, 15 minutes of doing one session, 15 minutes doing that session. And I think everybody enjoyed going to training after that. And, you know, I loved it. I improved so much under Arsene Wenger. It was frightening, really, to see how much I improved.
And did you have fears when he came in because you'd been there a while and you weren't like one of the new players or you hadn't been bought from the continent or anything like that?
Absolutely, yeah, of course. Yeah. You did. Really, everybody was on trial with him. You know, everybody was putting a little bit extra in training. Look, I trained hard anyway. I was one of those sort of characters who I couldn't play on a Saturday without training hard during the week. Some players could. Some players could go through the motions a little bit and get away with playing well at Saturday. But I weren't one of those sort of players. So I put it in every single training session. But everybody was on trial. I thought this could be in. It was a good stage as well because my room partner, Tony Adams, obviously, gave up drinking about 1996, about the same time. And I was always out with Tony. So I said, look, I'm not going to go out as much now. And I'm going to concentrate a little bit more on my career as well. And so that was a really good timing where it all fitted in for me, especially. That I said, right, I'm going to really, you know, put my head down and train hard, not go out as much because Tony's not going out now. And I was more or less, he was saying to me, Ray, come on, let's go out somewhere. And I was his little apprentice, really, to go out with him. So, yeah, that was the real turning point for me as well. But he was such a fair manager as well, which I liked about him, because he used to say to you, if you play well, you play next week. And in your mind, that's all you had to do, make sure you play well on that Saturday. And you knew you'd be in that team the following week. But certainly a lot of people were nervous because it's a new era. You don't know what he's like. You don't know who he's going to like. And because I play for Arsenal my career, you want to stay as long as possible if you can.
So you'd obviously already won the Premier League a couple of times. And then we came into this kind of amazing season. What do you think made your final season at Arsenal different?
Well, obviously, you can see the talent coming into the squad. You know, I always say Gilberto Silva, people like that, was very underrated because he was like an invisible wall, I used to call him. He was always in the right place at the right times. And you're not going to play as many games as you like. And that's where my ending come, because, you know, I said to the boss one day, I said, boss, I need to play. I can't be sitting in the stands at the weekends. I need to play. I'm getting to 31, 32. I ain't got long left in my career. And then I said to him, boss, we've got a great new player coming from Fabregas. I said, what a player this kid's going to be. And he went, yes, Ray, he's going to take your position. I said, yes, boss, I could see that. I definitely can see him take my position. And that's how it was. And in the end, I moved on. But that last season was unbelievable. I mean, if you look at the players, the squad itself, we used to have like a meeting before the season started, pre-season. And we go through everything what we want to try to achieve. Obviously, we want to win every trophy we can. But we know, realistically, we're not going to win every trophy. But we want to go a long way in different tournaments. And the year before, Arsene Wenger said, I mean, Martin Keown, he said this before, but he said, you know, this team can go unbeaten because that's how good they are. I think the lads, they've got pressure, but we said, well, we've got a great squad. And I always said it ain't about the 11 players on the pitch, because the 11 started, it was unbelievable. You've got to look at the backup we had, because you always get injuries, you always have suspensions. And I think what Arsene Wenger saw was that he had players to come in and step in, not do the job that Dennis Bergkamp did or Romary, but do similar sort of front. We had Kanu, Wiltord. We had so many good players up front. We can always turn a game if we're losing. Wenger put two subs on two strikers, and we got four up front, and we always have to score a goal. So, but the belief in the squad was unbelievable. And I always say to people now that the Friday was the training session on Friday. We always done an 8v8, which was amazing, and you should see the tackles flying in. No one wanted to lose the 8v8. That was and Arsene Wenger sometimes went, whoa, calm down. But because we were so competitive and didn't want to lose the ABA, then, you know, it was you know, this is a winning team. And when you put those 16 players together, you've got a chance of winning most games. And they never give up. That's a good sign as well. You know, when we went 2-0 down, we always had that belief that we could come back and maybe nick a result somewhere along the line. And well, that season we did.
And so you'd had that conversation about Cesc Fabregas. So did you play that season with an understanding that it was your final season, or were you thinking...
Oh, no, not really. No, this is like the end of the season, really.
Right. So during that season, you had no idea that you wouldn't be there for that much longer, no?
No, not at all. I always wanted to stay, but it was a situation where you also want to play football. And in my career, and to be fair, Arsene Wenger was very good about it. He said, "You're going to play 15, 20 games." I went, "Boss, that's probably not enough, really."
Yeah.
I know my legs are going a little bit, but I can still play a few more games than that. So it was we all understood each other, and he was very understanding. And then Middlesbrough come in and said, "Look, we've got a great side here. We really want to go forward." And there's some team, Hasselbank, Baduka, Downing was coming through, Zenden, Mendieta, Boateng, Gareth Southgate at the back with the late Hugo Hegyok and Schwarzer in goal. So we had a good team there. And plus, Jake, I just got involved, so I just wanted to get out of the area as well. That was another reason, really, as well.
There's always a lot of reasons.
There's quite a few reasons.
Let's talk then about that sort of team that was put together for that invincible season. I want to talk about, first of all, the goalkeeping position. So David Seaman leaving. First of all, how big a blow was it losing him?
Oh,
before Jens came in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was David Seaman was such a consistent goalkeeper through the years he was at Arsenal. I know, look, of course, we make mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but he was such a great goalkeeper, great guy as well. When he left, we thought, well, you know, who's going to be anywhere near as good as David Seaman to come in? But Jens Lehmann, what a character. I mean, he come through the door and straight away, "Oh, how are you doing, guys?" And you can see again the German nature in him that say, "Right, we ain't going to get beaten this season. I'm going to stop everything." And he was unbelievable. I mean, to get a goalkeeper, I put him on par with David Seaman. What a goalkeeper he was. And he kept us in games. I liked his attitude as well. He used to have a go at people, and that's what you want. You want winning mentalities. And certainly Jens was that. I remember the Inter Milan game when we went to Inter Milan and won 5-1. He'd done a big speech after the game saying, "I'm so proud to be involved in this club." And, you know, things like that. He was just a real character around the dressing rooms. And, you know, he was sensational that year. I go back to that season when we went to Portsmouth. Preston Park, I think two or three games before the end of the invincible season, and we should have lost 5-1. That would have been probably a fair result for both teams. We lose 5-1, but he was sensational in goal. He kept us in games. He probably had 3 1-on-1s. He saved them all three of them, and you know he's such an important. I always say strikers and goalkeepers. If you're going to be successful, you've got a top class goalkeeper and a top-class striker, because goals win your games, and obviously goalkeepers keep you in games at times.
And, you know, Jens coming in was one of a sort of raft of overseas players that people often think about when they think about the invincible season. And I just wonder whether you and some of those other English players that had been there and not just delivered for Arsenal before the invincible season, but also managed to adapt the way they play and fit into this new way of thinking, I just wonder whether they get enough credit for their involvement in this period. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I always go back to the British boys in the dressing room. Obviously, you had Ashley Cole, the left back. We didn't have many British guys, but you had the senior members. Me and Martin probably were the most senior players in the dressing room at that time. And they really looked up to you. They were really, you know, respectful and saying, "Well, you've been here a long, long time. You know the history of the club." And I think we brought that across. I'm going back to when Dennis Bergkamp turned up in 1996, and then obviously the foreign guys turned up 98, 99, Patrick and Thierry, 99, Mark Overmars. But they knew the character of what you had to do week in, week out. And I think the British guys were very good at that. And we've always made them feel at home, you know, say, "Look, come on, you know, we're a team." And I think the standards, they knew the standards you had to achieve every day in training and at games, obviously. But the foreign guys were unbelievable. I mean, I always say that they transformed the club, really, because the style of football, and, you know, Arsene Wenger was part of that, to change that style of football. Because if you go back to George Graham was a brilliant manager. What he achieved with the squad he had, but it wasn't flamboyant football. It wasn't, you know, free-flowing football. It was very much defensive-minded. Win 1-0, shut up shop, we win the game. But now Arsene Wenger said to me, "Go and express yourself. Go and, you know, when you get that final third, go past the player. Try and do things that you've never done before." And that really gives you a lot of belief and, you know, willingness to go, "Come on, let's go out there and have a go." And I think that was brilliant. But the foreign guys were different class. I mean, the French guys, in particular. Patrick, what a player he was. Robert Perez, after losing Overmars, was thinking, oh, Harry, you know, he's such a big player for us. And Overmars has left, got to Barcelona. Then he brings in Robert Perez, who's just as good, technically. Probably didn't score as many goals, but he was such a great player, Robert Perez. And he had Freddie Ljungberg, he had, you know, all these sort of guys coming in, and they just got into the mould of being an Arsenal player. And what I can say about the players who come in, there's not many guys who left quickly. You know, there's a couple like Anelka, maybe Mark Overmars didn't stay as long as he'd like to. But a lot of the guys, was longevity was unbelievable. Patrick, 9 or 10 years. Dennis Bergkamp, all his career, really. Thierry, all that time. Freddie Ljungberg, Perez, they stayed because they knew the importance of the club and, you know, successful they're going to be if they stay at the club.
Well, let's focus then on that season specifically. Like pre-season, did it feel like any other pre-season? There's no sort of understanding there that things had gone up a level or anything, because obviously you'd had a brilliant season the season before. You were kind of flying already, right?
No, yeah, nothing really changed, if I'm being honest. It was a normal pre-season, the normal, you know, tour we're going to go on, probably Europe somewhere. You know, you come in, you do your little bit of training before you go back. We won the Cup the year before, the FA Cup, but probably in the league, we could have done better. So I think expectations was always getting higher, and most of the squad, you know, was in the 202 when we won a double, so they've been there and won trophies. But I don't think nothing was different. We come in, we had a normal meeting, so we wanted to win every trophy. Obviously, Champions League was the one that I think Arsene Wenger was trying to win, because we hadn't won that as a group of players. But you know, we had a normal 6 weeks of pre-season. It all went really well, and then, you know, what Arsene Wenger done really well was the pre-season training. All done in blocks. So your first block was pretty straightforward, not too hard. Then it'd get harder, and then you have a week before you start the season. Usually it was in the Charity Shield or Community Shield. That's when you're really ready to go. And we was always 100% fit, ready to go, first game of the season. But no one expected. All our aim was to win the league. That's our only aim. It wasn't unbeaten. No one even talked about being unbeaten or can we try and win every game or can we... It was all about winning that trophy, the Premier League. And that's how we went into the first game of the season. Obviously, had a decent start, and then you always got a chance with the players we had on the pitch.
And you won the first four games, if you remember. So I know you just say we take each game as it comes, but you must have been starting at that point to think, all right, good, just keep it going like this and we'll be all right.
In my opinion, that I was thinking we're going to go unbeaten, because you always have one bad day when things don't click, players just don't go your way, maybe decisions don't go your way and you lose a game. So most of the season we've won before, we've lost 4, 5, 6 games. So you expected to lose a game, if I'm being honest. But it's all about, you know, come May, you're like that with the trophy. You're picking a trophy. That's what it's all about. So we had a good start, which, you know, I always say the pre-season was so good under Arsene Wenger that we always started pretty well. We always had a bit of a bad period going back under Arsene Wenger in November. If you go back in the records, we always seem to, you know, stutter a little bit and maybe not play as fluently. And you always lost a game in November time. So I think in the back of our minds, it was always, come on, let's get to November. And then we have to somehow change this around and not be as bad in November. We always had a little bit of a dip. I don't know what it was, but that was the bad month for us usually. And yeah, it's an old cliche, but you did take one game at a time. You didn't think about going unbeaten, but you always wanted to win or get something out of the game. And, you know, with the squad we had and the ability we had, we usually could do that.
And around that time, just before November, September, you had that game against Manchester United, the 0-0, where it all kicked off, and the Mike Keown moment and Rude's penalty.
Yeah. That was a big game, by the way. That was a big game in our season, because Manchester United, not being disrespectful to any other club, but when the fixture list come out during when you're on holiday or whatever, the first thing you looked at is when you play Man United, or home and away. Because if you could get probably 4 points out of those games, you've got a chance of winning the league. Because Chelsea were getting much better, obviously. Your money was going into Chelsea and there was improvement on time by big players. Liverpool was nowhere near like they are now. Man City was not even, I think they was in a different division, I don't know, I can't remember now. But it was nowhere near. It was always Arsenal, Manchester United, that era, for probably 5 or 6 years. And that was a big, big game because obviously a penalty, last kick of the game, Patrick Vieira has been sent off. And if I'm being honest, I'll have my house on Van Nistelrooy scoring that goal. I thought, well, that's it. It's all over. The game's over. We've lost 1-0 to our rivals in September. It's, you know, that's it. They're going to be big favourites to win the league now. But lucky enough, he did miss it. And I remember Jens running up and down the line. It's like not as bad as Bruce Grobbelaar back in the day, but he's running up and down the line trying to put him off. And obviously Martin, I think the reaction after that was just a relief that he'd missed it.
Yeah,
and especially Martin, because he'd give away the penalty as well. So, you know, and we was a little bit out of order. I must admit, we shouldn't have done what we did. But it was such a feisty game. It was such a important game for both teams for the season. And that's, I think most of it was relief that we didn't lose that game. And we were delighted with a 0-0 draw. Absolutely delighted.
And I think, you know, obviously I was, you know, a guy watching on. I remember loving the way you played football. And I remember watching that game thinking, I love how they play football, but when they need to have a scrap, they can also have a scrap. And I guess for you guys, that was probably quite important as well.
Oh, absolutely. I could go back to Sheffield United I think it was a semi-final at Old Trafford. 03, I think it was. And I remember Neil Warnock, their manager, get him, they don't like it. You know, get him around them. And I remember they done Robert Perez, who he wasn't an attacker. He wasn't, you know, Robert Perez was a more player. You don't create chances for us and set goals up and score goals yourself, but we look after you as well. And I always remember me and Martin and Patrick saying, right, I've got to do one, you've got to do one of them. We take turns, right? I'll do the first one. And I remember taking someone out, yellow card, all of a sudden Patrick done one, Martin done one. They go, whoa, we didn't expect this. We didn't expect this. And I remember after the game, Neil Warnock saying, oh, they kicked us off the park. It was out. But you had that in your team as well. You know, Dennis Bergkamp, believe it or not, he could look after himself. You know, we all know how talented he was as a player, but he could only leave an elbow if he had to, that sort of thing, you know. And so we had a lot of tough guys in the team as well. Patrick going through the midfield, obviously Martin in the back, Sol Campbell, Ashley Cole. And one of the toughest guys was Lovren, the right back. Now, Lovren, you see, he was involved in that 2004, but he could look after himself, you know, big, well-built and, you know, such a strong team. As much as it was very talented going forward and we could pass and we could move, you know, if you had to mix it a little bit, then you could, which was very important as well if you're going to be successful.
And how important in all of this, in terms of sort of setting the tone for your opponents, was the atmosphere in Highbury, making that a formidable place for them to come?
Highbury was unbelievable. People used to have a go and say, be quiet in it, Highbury. I said, oh, but wait a minute, I'll play every other week. I always think it's a great atmosphere. And what I'll tell you what was a big buzz about the lads as well was when we turned up, because it's not normal now. Look at most of the guys now, they turn up, especially at the Emirates. You go underneath, the fans don't see the players turn up. You know, see the coach going along. The good thing about Highbury was you parked and you had like barriers where the fans can't go and you walk through the marble halls. All of a sudden, you know, I can go back to 98 when we started being successful. And you used to have about 20 people hanging around when we turned up. That's about it. And then all of a sudden you start winning games. And then there's another 20 turn up. And then there's another 20 turn up. And the Invincible season, it was all down the street. It was probably 300 deep. Of fans. And when you walked off that coach, the buzz you got, because all singing your name, and that little bit of a lift we had, you know, and I'm sure the away team who were turning up, they were booing them as they get off, and you know, I go, wow, didn't expect this. So I think that was a big lift for us as well. Every time we walked out off that coach, and the lads used to love it, you know, get a big buzz about the roar we used to get as we were walking off. And then we get in the dressing room area and you're thinking, come on, lads, you know, we've got everybody behind us here. And Highbury was such a tight little stadium. The tunnel, believe it or not, you had to be on the half turn to let the linesman through and the referees through. So that was an important part as well. They'd be looking across going, Patrick, Gilberto Silva, Thierry Henry, Dennis Bergkamp, Jens Lehmann. What a team this is. And a lot of the time they froze the other team, and that always gives us a massive advantage as well, probably in that tunnel.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because there's no doubt, you know, the Emirates is a far better stadium for modern football in terms of the equipment it has. But there is something about those old grounds that just added to the challenge, I think, for the opposition.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you go back to Upton Park, West Ham, really tough place to play when it was really, you could take a throw in. And someone attacked me on the shoulder. That's how close you was to the pitch. QPR, Loftus Road, Everton, all them sort of old iconic stadiums were real tough. And if the crowd got right behind the team, he was on the back foot straight away. So I think Highbury was very similar. And you know, tickets were so hard to get in that era. I mean, I remember people saying, "Ray, can you get me?" I said, "Look, I haven't got no tickets. I'm playing, but I haven't got no tickets left," because it only held 38,000 fans. So it was people queuing up outside, trying to get in, look over the fence. And it was a real good era to be a supporter. And I'll probably give away half of my shirt, because as you walk through to the car park after the game, you always had the kids there. "Oh, Ray, can I have your shirt? Oh, here you go, son, there you go." And that's, you know, that's how it was. It was a great connection, if I'm being honest, with the players and fans at that era, as much as it is now. And that's what I see now at the Emirates with the current squad, that the connection is there and the crowd are really getting behind them. And the players have got to respond to that. We certainly did. So I'm hoping it'll be the same this season, that they can keep going the way they're doing.
It's interesting that actually there was that period where that connection felt lost. And even that physicality in that fight, remember, like towards the end of the Arsene Wenger era?
Yes.
I mean, I found it sad seeing the criticism. And for you, who was central to the success under him, that must have been pretty heartbreaking for you.
Yeah, it was really hard to go and watch games, if I'm being honest. I mean, I was going over there, empty seats. And that was the decision they had to make in the end, because the empty seats, that wasn't good for anybody. You know, I'm sure when the broadcasters were showing the stands, empty seats, that, you know, that's not good for the club. And it was a real toxic atmosphere, if I'm being honest. They just wanted, you know, whether Arsene Wenger stayed too long, I don't know. It was a decision that he wanted to stay, or the board said, "Well, we haven't got another manager." But it was really heartbreaking to see, because he transformed that club. There's no doubt about it. You know, he was the man who said, "Let's go, we need a bigger stadium. We need a better training ground. We need better players. We need this, we need that." And he got it, because David Dean trusted him. And he was such a great, great guy. I mean, people don't understand that. You might come across him a little bit, you know, but he loved a bit of humour. He loved you having a laugh. He loved you. He always tried to do the best for the players. He was on your side more than the club side. And he was such an important player. So, you know, I'm waiting for the statue to go up outside, whether it will or not. It should. Certainly, Dennis Bergkamp's got one, Thierry's got one, and Tony's got one. But Arsene Wenger is probably the most important person to have a statue outside that stadium.
Yeah, I agree. To give you, I mean, I'm sure he had the similar impact on you, but I remember working at Euro 2012 with Martin Keown.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't drink sparkling water, because he was told by Arsene Wenger that it was not good for him. Do you remember that?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was on water only. I mean, look, I still went out and enjoyed myself after the game, but I sort of done it in the right times. You know, I didn't go out in the early 90s. It was, we're going out every day, more or less, except till Thursday, and then we knock it on the head. We'll be playing Saturday. But I think that everybody was doing the same thing. Everybody, every club was socialising, enjoying themselves. And I think the foreign guys changed that, because there was a lot more professional, if I'm being honest, than, you know, the British guys. And they sort of change your attitude a little bit, especially Dennis Bergkamp. He used to train. After training, he'd do a little bit extra on his own. And, you know, all of a sudden I said, "Dennis, do you want me to put some balls in from the right-hand side for you? Oh, would you mind?" "Yeah, oh, great, no problem." Now, suddenly, I'm standing behind doing a bit of extra. So all that sort of transformation, really, was so good for everybody. But Arsene Wenger was a genius. He really was. Every day on that training field, he didn't miss one training session. If the first team were doing a warm down, which usually was like a 20 minutes on a bike, a stretching session, you know, all that sort of stuff, he'd be on the field with all the other guys, waiting to make sure they're up to speed, whether they're needed or not. So he was brilliant. And after training, sometimes I say, "Boss, my left foot, I need to do a few crosses my left foot. Ray, I will stay with you and do some." He never just said, "Right, the coach, you go and do it with him," and whatever. He said, "No, I'll stay with you." And he was how I improved my game was all down to Arsene Wenger, because he'd give you that belief. He put the hours in. You had to put the hours in as well. But he was a fantastic manager, really was.
Love it. Well, let's go back to that unbeaten season then. You had that run of games, United, Newcastle, Liverpool, Chelsea. Forget about unbeaten, but you must have been thinking at that point, right, well, at least we're in a good title hunt here. The title is on for this season.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And you're always expecting to drop points, like losing a couple of games maybe. But yeah, we had that big week. I always say the biggest week of our life when we got out of the FA Cup. Obviously, Manchester United beat us in the FA Cup. Chelsea in the Champions League, Wayne Bridge scored late at Highbury as well. And then it could all go wrong on the weekend. We played Liverpool. And I think it was 2-1 down half time. And we were all looking at each other going, and I wasn't involved in that game, but I was in the dressing room areas around that time, and we were looking at each other going, come on, we can't blow this. You know, we got to come out and get back into the game. And, you know, again, I sort of talk about great talented players, but Thierry Henry, in the end, that day, he more or less won the game on his own, scoring a hat trick. That's the one where Carragher fell over in the box when he went past him. But that was a big turning point. You know, we managed to win the game 4-2 and we were back on track again. And, you know, you always going to get setbacks in the season. I always say about a good team would always handle a setback. You know, how you bounce back from losing a game. And that week was really pivotal in the team, not just to go unbeaten, but to win the league as well. Because that result, we lost against Liverpool that weekend. Then suddenly there was a lot of doubt in people's minds, and 3 games in a week we've lost. Suddenly, you know, the confidence is draining out of the team and the belief. So that game was such an important game, winning 4-2 against Liverpool.
Thierry Henry, obviously, he top in the Premier League goal scoring charts early in your invincible season. What would you tell us about how he was on and off the pitch?
Thierry was a great guy, he really was. And believe it or not, when he first came in, very quiet. You know, he sat there, he was a young lad, 21, 22, just come from, when did he come from? Juventus, wasn't it? And you're thinking, well, and we just lost Nicolas Anelka. What a player he was, by the way. He could have been probably just on the same level as Thierry if he stayed, because he had all the attributes to be a top striker as well. And I remember the first season he turned up, and it was, I don't think he scored for 7 games. And we all the lads are going, oh, we can't win the league. We've got no chance. Because we need a goal scorer. And then he scored his first goal. I always remember his first goal at Adele against Southampton. And he swivelled and boff, straight into the corner. And after that, give him so much confidence, belief. And he was such a, strong guy. I reckon technically got much better under Arsene Wenger, because I think he played on the wide areas for Juventus, and Arsene Wenger worked with him at Monaco, and he knew he was a centre forward. But his finishing, it's all down to training field. He worked hard every day and he practiced, and, you know, he got better and better and better. And in the end, he was unbelievable. What a player. I mean, it's close, but when they say who's the best player you played with, I always say it's out of 2 players only. It's Dennis Bergkamp or Thierry. And he's probably a toss of a coin. Who's better? I mean, Dennis was a little bit more influential in the early parts of when he turned up, 96, 97 season, 98. But Thierry could win a game on his own. I remember the Inter Milan game I mentioned earlier, 5-1 game. The Italian defence were very, very strong, but he ran ragged. Unbelievable. I've never seen a performance like it, where people like Zanetti, who's a very experienced fullback or centre-half, He after the game, he just went, well, he must have thought, who's this guy? You know, I can't deal with this guy. He's unbelievable. So that's the sort of guy he was. And during the Invincible season, I go back to that Liverpool game. You know, I've never seen a performance like that from a striker. And you asked Jamie Carragher, so what was it like to play against Thierry Henry? Well, he had strength, he had pace. And when he got in a good area, he never panicked. If you look at his goals, From first at Arsenal to the last day, he used to pass it into the net. He learned how to just open his body out and just pass it into the corner where the keeper had no chance to get it. So, you know, and he had all different sorts of goals. Probably the only goals he didn't score with his head. He didn't score many with his head. And he was 6'2", so he could have done. You know, he was a big guy. But his finishing power and his ability was amazing. Once it, on any one-on-one, you think, well, it's a goal. It's going to be a goal. Because he was so clever as well when he was through. And as I said before, I played some great strikers, Ian Wright, Thierry, Dennis. But Thierry was to beat the goal record as well. I mean, Ian Wright, I played that game when he put his shirt over his head and he scored the goal that beat the goal record. And I thought, no one's going to beat that. And Thierry, to be fair to him, beat by 50 goals. So that just shows you how special he was. And a great guy as well. Great for the dressing room area as well.
And how intense were the rivalries between the teams like Liverpool and obviously we've already spoken about Manchester United? Like, was there like a genuine antipathy or a dislike? Did you create that kind of like band of brothers spirit against the other top sides?
Yeah, I think there was always a dislike of any team. Obviously, it's difficult when you're playing so many London derbies as well. You know, everybody wants to beat each other. You know the rivalry between the fans and the other team, so you're aware of what's at stake. So I think there was always rivalry between every team. Like, no one wants to lose, and there's certain games. You always have a bit of history on a certain club. You know, Liverpool, you go back to 89 when they won at Anfield, and that will be in the memory of Liverpool forever, that Arsenal went there 1-2-0, won the league there. So there's always rivalry between every single. Chelsea, you know, going back to 2002, when we beat them in a cup final. And you know, so there's a rivalry between the teams there. So obviously Spurs is obviously North London derby, and then you've got West Ham and clubs like that. So there's always rivalry between every club. And that season especially, everybody wanted to beat Arsenal because we was on that run where we haven't been beaten. And we wanted to be the first team to beat Arsenal, this great side. And I always go back to that period as well. I mean, the last four games, we won the league at White Hart Lane. The last four games were so difficult. I mean, we had Fulham, Birmingham, Leicester and Portsmouth. And on paper, we should win that. We should, no problem. You know, it's a no-brainer. We should walk over it. We ain't got Chelsea. We ain't got Liverpool. We ain't got Man. You know, we ain't got the big sides, if you like. But they were the hardest four games. I promise you now, Jake, it was... The lads had took their foot off the pedal a little bit. You could easily do that. I remember winning the league in 98 against Everton. And we go to Liverpool the next game. We lose 4-0, but it didn't matter because we're all champions of the Premier League. It doesn't matter. After that, we can lose 4-0. But all of a sudden, we've won the league on White Hart Lane, but we've still got to keep focus because we're still unbeaten. And obviously, the press at that time were really ramping it up. They have not been beaten yet. Who's going to be the first team that beats them? So it even got harder the last four games, if I'm being honest.
So when you'd won the league, when did the conversation... Was the conversation after winning the league straight away like, listen, we've done that now, let's make this an unbeaten season, let's create history?
I think 10 games before the end of the season, then that's when it was really ramping up. No one's beat Arsenal yet. Can they do it? And, you know, every day you pick the paper up, maybe there's something about it. Then we win the next game and there's 9 to go. There's 9 away from the, you know, it's Sunday. But the lads were very focused. It was really, you know, it was all about winning the Premier League. That's the most important thing for the club. And we've done it a while and we have 4 games left. Now, I think that we would have had a meeting with Arsenal. I'm trying to remember the meeting, but we would have had a meeting and say, look, let's keep focused. We've got 4 games left. It could be a remarkable season if we can go unbeaten. So that's how we went into every game. And I think everybody said, right, we'll have a big celebration at the end of it. So we didn't go out and enjoy ourselves and what we should because we won the Premier League. We said, right, let's keep it, you know, in the fridge, sort of ready to go out after the last game. And it was, again, we an old cliche, one game at a time. So we got past the next one, 3 games left. Again, that always sticks in my mind, that Portsmouth game. That Portsmouth game was, if you look at the footage of it, the replay of it, we got battered, absolutely battered. Bless his soul, Reyes was the guy who got the goal for us, out of nothing really. But then Jens Lehmann was sensational, absolutely brilliant. And we managed to defend well during the game. We ended up getting a 1-1 draw. But, you know, I remember walking off after that saying, we're going to definitely go and beat him now. Because something's with us this season to make us get a 1-1 draw tonight because we got absolutely battered.
So when did you actually think we could be invincible?
Do you know what? We still knew that there's a lot of football to be played. I always, as soon as the press started, I think, putting it into the papers, and no, it was never mentioned in the dressing room. Never.
Honestly?
Day-to-day training. No, no. We never going, all right, lads, we can go beat this season. Make sure we do it. It was never mentioned because, you know, I think sometimes it can be too much on certain players and a bit more pressure on you. It was all about winning the trophy. After that, maybe, yeah, some people make a bit of a joke of it. Oh, lads, we haven't been beaten yet. Come on, we've got to keep going. And, you know, so that sort of, it wasn't always we have a meeting about, oh, we can go and beat in here. It was just get on with it sort of thing. And the squad itself, we had such a good squad of players that obviously Arsene Wenger had loads of, he probably rested a couple of players in between that, which he didn't have to do. I remember I played probably three of the last four games, if I remember rightly. So, you know, it was one of those situations where every single player who came into the team knew the importance of the games. But I don't think it was ever really mentioned. And I don't think it was ever in people's minds. But obviously, every single player read the papers and we could see what the press were trying to say, this team can go unbeaten. And, you know, going to the last game of the season, it was an amazing atmosphere. It really was. I mean, again, I'll just talk about getting off the coach. Imagine it now. You can't see the fans down the road, Avenel Road. You couldn't see the end of the road, and still fans there. That's how busy it was, because they knew this could be an iconic moment that the club, being at home as well, that they can go and beat.
Amazing.
It really was. It was amazing to be involved in the all the scenes before that last game, because you could just hear the fans outside the dressing rooms and, you know, going mad. And it was, and they'd won the Premier League, but they knew that this is a special moment. If you're in that stadium, you can always say, I was in that stadium when they went unbeaten that last game of the season.
And we've gone on to see, like, unbelievable teams, haven't we, since that time, over the last 20-odd years. And then none of them have managed to do this.
To be fair, I always have a little celebration when someone gets beat. I remember Liverpool, a couple of seasons ago, wasn't it, when they went to Watford. And Watford were relegated, wasn't they? And they managed to get a 3-0 win. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is brilliant, you know, because it goes another year with another club. So look, maybe it does happen again. Because you look at the talent Man City have got now and the squad they've got. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it did happen, but, you know, you always deep down, you don't want it to happen, because you could always, you know, go to your grave and say, oh, I was involved in that team, but went unbeaten. And it's such a big achievement to have as a player. It's great having medals and all that, but that's a massive bonus. That is a real big bonus to have that as in your locker as well, to say, look, I was in that team that was unbeaten in 2004.
And I'm sure at the time you thought, yeah, that's impressive. But all these years later, do you think it's even a bigger deal now than it was at that time, because nobody before or since has managed it in the Premier League?
I don't think it really sunk in for a few years. Straight after the game, I didn't really sit there and go, we've gone unbeaten. You know, you enjoyed the moment. You enjoyed, again, I'll go back to picking the trophy up. That was the most important thing for that season. But then you think, wow, we did go unbeaten. That is unbelievable to do that as a team, because, as I said before, you always have one bad game or things go against you, and you might get key players getting injured, or the referee makes some bad decisions and you lose the game. And probably a few seasons later, you're thinking, oh, that was an unbelievable achievement. And it's not just that, it's people, you know, in the street coming up to you, oh, the Invincibles, and, you know, they talk about it more than probably yourself. Which is a nice, you know, I've got to walk down there, any Arsenal fan, oh, the Invincible season, that was unbelievable, that was great. And you just enjoy, you know, to being part of it, really. And I was very lucky to be part of that.
And how did the boss celebrate? You know, he was notorious for making sure you all look after yourselves and whatever. Did he let his hair down and have a night out with you all?
He would have had a few beers, a few glasses of wine, the boss. He likes a secret beer sometimes, Arsene Wenger. But you know what? This was his makeup. It would have been, right, can we do it next season? You know, that's the sort of guy he was. He was always trying to overachieve, trying to win every single week. He was that sort of character. And that came across with the players as well. And he had a real winning mentality, which I think over the years under Arsene Wenger, I know towards the end of it, it got a little bit harder for him. But under my year, when I was in that era, It was a real winning mentality. Come on, lads, let's go out there. Let's make sure we train hard and get out there and do your stuff. And I think I always go back to 98. That was a big season because he really shocked everybody by a guy coming in, foreign guy. No one knew who he was. And then suddenly he's transformed this team, brought in some fantastic players, Anelka, Vieira, Overmars, Petit. And he's transformed the club itself. And, you know, that's why all the arguments were between that Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger, because Sir Alex Ferguson knew, who's this guy? He knows what he's doing. He can set up a team that can beat us. And probably 05, it changed a little bit. It went to Mourinho when he went to Chelsea. And Sir Alex Ferguson was going, well, he's more of a threat now than Arsene Wenger. So I'm going to have a few mind games with him. So, that's what you love in football. You love that rivalry. You love that... And obviously, Manchester United was there. If you ever watch the games, I mean, I'll have 5 ice packs on my legs after the game where you've been kicked. And, you know, the desire from both sides was so intense. And you knew you had to try and get results somehow if you're going to be successful going forward. So, you know, I love those games. I'm sure punters, neutrals, would love to watch those games because it was proper. You know, you're getting kicked and Roy Keane in midfield trying to have fights with everyone. We're having fights. It was great to watch. And they're the sort of games I like to watch now, if I'm being honest.
Yeah. Look, you had great steel, but you also had great flair. Finally, do you think there's any team throughout sort of Premier League history that you think would beat the Invincibles if you were on your day, if you were playing the best on your day?
I think it's very difficult because, you know, to compare teams. Look at Man City now. They're magnificent to watch. Liverpool have been brilliant to watch. And to be fair, I mean, people ask me, what was the best team I played in? And I said, well, it's going to be close. I mean, 98 was a great team. 98 could probably give the Invincibles a real run for their money, I should imagine. Maybe beat them because the only people missing in that team was obviously Henri was a big player who wasn't playing in 98. But other than that, we had Nicolas Anelka was some player. But I always think that comparing teams is very difficult. I mean, you go back to the 80s when Liverpool, you know, what a team they were in the 80s. So I always think I wouldn't compare them, but it'd be some game. And one thing about our team in the Invincible season was we'd always give you a game for 95 minutes. It wouldn't be, oh, right, we're 1-0 down, 2-0 down, we shut up shop and we lose the game. There would always be something where we try somehow get back in the game, which was a real mentality. The bench was very important as well for Arsene Wenger. So, but I love watching Man City. And they did do it, or whoever done it, I shake their hand and say, well done, because it's tough to do what you've done. But we was the first one to do it.
No one can ever take that away from you. Whatever else happens.
Well, it did happen in the 1800s, but I don't count the 1800s.
Sweet. Look, thank you so much, mate. That was really interesting.
Wasn't that cool? What a team they were, and so great to get Ray's insights into that season.
The Invincibles was, as we know, chock full of the best talent the Premier League had to offer. But Thierry Henry stands head and shoulders above the rest. Jens Lehmann reminisces about seeing him in training.
Thierry was a special guy, still is a special guy, because sometimes in training he was a bit lazy and... not lazy, but he didn't really like to give everything. But my approach was, if somebody's playing in my team and he's not doing right and he's not giving everything and we are losing, then there were some complaints. And I was telling him sometimes, Thierry, you have to run more. And he was responding in French, something I didn't understand. Vavavoom or something like that. So I kept going at him. After a while, everybody was looking at him and he knew, oh, now I have to run because all the others are looking at me. And that was something where I knew, okay, I had to deliver, because if I had to, or if I let myself down, he would have had a go at me. So it was a special relationship, but obviously we all benefited so much from him that sometimes in training or wherever, he could afford to take it easier.
And that's not to forget Arsene Wenger's role in all this. While he, of course, stayed for well over another decade in North London, the Invincibles will always be his crowning achievement. Glenn Hoddle, who worked with him at Monaco, was never surprised that he took English football by storm.
Arsene and myself clicked as people more than football people. Something happened. I don't know, I was probably 28 when I went across to Monaco. He's a very friendly guy. He can talk outside of football. It's not just football, football, football. You would think so, but he's not. He can talk. So we hit it off from day one in many ways. So we used to speak about all sorts of things. And so there's always been that friendship there.
The Invincibles wowed crowds up and down the country and even opposing managers. Harry Redknapp, who was at Portsmouth in 03-04, picks them just as the best side in Premier League history.
If I had to pick a team, I'd probably, difficult, I might go for the Invincibles. It was a special team. Again, it had everything, didn't it? You know, yeah, it had a perfect, it was such a well-balanced team. It had width, it had pace, it had strength in midfield with ability, power. Two big midfield players who, you know, you work the gun, intimidate them. Leaders, you know, great full. The fullbacks were, you know, so solid. It was a fantastic group of players.
Arsenal fans were in raptures at their incredible achievement and their gold Premier League trophy. And you'd forgive them for thinking they'd go on to dominate for the next few years. However, a few miles across the capital, Chelsea had been bought by Roman Abramovich in the summer of 2003 and had gone on a transfer spree the likes of which had never been seen before. Although they couldn't topple the Invincibles in the league that season, they did so in the Champions League quarter-finals with a sense that London football was shifting. In 2004, a young Portuguese manager took the helm at Stamford Bridge. Join us next time for the Premier League storybook Chapter 9, The Special Ones. Sport Pods.